So the talk tonight is titled Healing Trauma to Live in the Now. We all have challenges, don't we, living in the now? There's lots of reasons we get very distracted, and the main one is just that we've practiced the habit of being out of the present moment and being lost in the future with our thinking mind. Past and future don't exist except as concepts. There's just this. And so when we think of the past, we're actually creating a past, because when we think of the past, we draw on something 40 years ago or yesterday or 5 minutes ago. We actually create the past because we're just focusing on one little aspect when we're in the past. The same for the future. So we create past and future with our thoughts, and we get very stressed out by that. We're actually pretty darn happy when we can actually relax enough just to be in our senses in the present moment, aware of the present moment. So we all struggle with being in the present. It's kind of a human condition. Traumatic events are a big reason we can be stuck in the past. Not just habit, but intense events that impact us so deeply that in some way we might be working through it for a lifetime. And I just wanted to address working with traumatic events in the wake of the Aurora shootings. And I know we're a little more removed here in Boulder. Is there anyone who knows someone who was affected, actually injured or killed in the shootings? So for us, it's maybe you know somebody who knows somebody. Anyone know somebody who knows somebody?
They were there. They didn't get hurt.
Oh, yeah. So an event like that, you know, just networks out through all of us. And we're a step removed just because we're far enough away that none of us know someone, well, except someone who's directly involved. And because we're sort of not in the epicenter of it, I thought it would just be helpful to more generally kind of talk about trauma and how trauma relates to our practice, how we can release trauma. I'm going to go through an exercise relating to an approach to trauma called somatic experiencing, developed by Peter Levine and others, that can, you know, maybe give you a little bit of a taste of how it actually is a process that involves a lot of mindfulness of body. So you may just check in right away, just right now, and notice how you're responding to everything you just heard. How you doing? Notice your mental state, and if you would, notice your physical state. What sensation or sensations are most obvious right now? This is one way to stay grounded. You know, as we talk about difficult material, just keep coming back to your body. Everything I'm saying is in the thought realm. So thoughts aren't really the problem. Yes, they create our suffering, but thoughts can also be very useful. So hopefully some of these thoughts are useful tonight. just keep checking in with yourself. Keep checking in with your body so you know how you're doing. It's not knowing how we're doing that actually can lead us into overwhelming states. So if we keep tracking our body, we'll start to notice if we're heading towards our edge. If at any point you just need to, I don't think it's going to be super heavy, but if at any point you feel the need, like you're getting re-stimulated in some way, and it's just a little too much, you know, just take a break. No problem. So something like the shootings. My main teacher, Joseph Goldstein, likes to say anything can happen at any time. Life is very vulnerable. Now, much of the time, we're bumping along, you know, doing okay, having major or minor stressors, but nothing traumatic. And then suddenly, you know, just something terrible can happen. The words that come to mind for me around these shootings, the first one, of course, is shock. The second one is horror. And the third one is, well, it's more of a phrase. I can't make sense of it. Can you make sense of it? There's some part of us that wants to make sense of it. It's incomprehensible that something like this can happen. I mean, in a movie theater. Check in. How you doing? Feel your body. Know you have a breath. So trauma is a level of stress that's beyond just stress. If we're stressed out, we can meditate, we can take a walk, chat with a friend, get a massage, and we calm down. And trauma is where we get hit deeper, and the body can stay in a traumatic response no matter what we do. And we, you know, trauma is, we all know it. I mean, just the statistics, you know, on sexual assault of women, I mean, it's horrifying, right? 1 out of 3 or 1 out of 4. I mean, just that. Much less child abuse, much less natural disasters, much less war. You know, the trauma of being in the 4 Mile fire or the Hyde Park fire, all these recent fires, car accidents. There's a lot of traumatic things that happen in life. And actually, our practice is designed for this. The Buddha was an incredible realist. And in my experience, I hope it's your experience, he came up with a practice that can handle this. Actually, we can heal trauma just through mindfulness if you're really, really digging deep with your practice. Awareness in and of itself is healing over time. Just to be aware of your experience and not lost in the experience gives a chance for the energy bound in that experience to release. So in that way, awareness in and of itself heals trauma. If you can be aware, really mindful, and especially in the body experience of a difficult emotion, it purifies and releases over time. You need a lot of reps. You need to do it a lot. But it does release. Traumatic states are the most difficult ones. We can release them in a moment, but they come back. We can release them again, and they come back. Traumatic states tend to be states that just keep coming back. And sometimes we really need help. We need other techniques. We need other ways of working with trauma. And the trauma approach I'm going to talk about, somatic experiencing, in a way, it's not just accelerating mindfulness, but a big part of it is actually a structured, directed way of being mindful that accelerates what mindfulness naturally does. It accelerates the release process, but it's more structured and more directed. And then I want to talk tonight, when I talk about trauma, I'm really going to talk about it with small t trauma, not full-blown PTS. Full-blown PTS is obviously under the umbrella, but I'm talking about a much bigger range of traumatic responses. So classic capital T trauma, PTS, post-traumatic stress. Notice I'm not putting the D on it because it's actually not a disorder. Actually, a traumatic response makes sense in lots of ways. It's actually not, you know, a disorder. It's actually a body's systemic kind of logical, I don't know if that's the right word, response when it's under-resourced, when the body doesn't, and your system doesn't have enough resources to cope with the situation. So classic PTS is a serious threat of either serious injury or death, or actual serious injury, either to you or to witnessing it. So in the Aurora shootings, the person, you know, that was there witnessing the situation. And I'm just going through the classical. This definition is out of the DSM, you know, the psychologist, the way psychologists categorize things. And there has to be intense fear or helplessness that are part of it. So not every, big event is necessarily traumatic. It affects different people differently. And then some of the classic symptoms when you've been through a traumatic event are that you re-experience it. You have intrusive thoughts, memories, dreams, flashbacks. People who are in full-on PTS avoid any stimulus associated with the event. A classic one would be someone in present life just has a deep, deep aversion to cigarette smoke because someone who is abusive to them in a past was smoking a cigarette at the time. So a person who's traumatized will just want to be avoiding cigarettes at all costs because it triggers so much in them. So that's a big part of PTS behavior, is that someone's avoiding anything that reminds them. And there's a heightened arousal. So there's sleep disturbance, irritability, rage, loss of concentration, hypervigilance, person's easily startled. And all of this has to last for at least a month. Again, this is classical PTS. And then finally, it results in some kind of, you know, real loss of your ability to function, either socially or at work. So that's the full-blown trauma response. What we're going to talk about tonight is really any trauma response at all, and the way I'm using it is basically an event that happens that, or a series of events that leaves you stuck in the past in some kind of way that interferes with your life, your happiness, your relationships, your work, etc. So this can be lots of things. And what trauma is, this, I like this very simple definition that I've learned through the somatic experience approach. It's basically too much too fast. So our nervous system gets overwhelmed. What happens in a trauma situation is we perceive a threat, and it happens either so fast or we're being coerced in some way that we don't get to. Our energy gets mobilized to deal with the situation, but we can't deal with a situation because it's either too much and we're being coerced, or it's too fast and we don't have time. Too fast being a car accident. So trauma is basically too much, too fast. Our nervous systems can't process it. All this energy gets mobilized, and that energy has to go somewhere. It doesn't actually get to be completed through some kind of action or expression, so it gets sublimated into the body, and it stays stuck in our nervous system until we release it in some way. So in this thinking more broadly about trauma with a small t, we can be in a traumatic response just to hearing about an event like the Aurora shootings. And there's lots of things besides, you know, the big, huge events that we would think of as trauma-inducing. There's lots of other things. People can get traumatized by surgery. That's a big one. By verbal emotional abuse, by bullying. I've worked with clients who've been traumatized by, you know, a really abusive boss. People who've been sued, who've been in legal situations where they've basically felt betrayed by coworkers or clients of theirs, or, you know, we can get traumatized in lots of different ways. And another, you know, really deep, more pervasive category of traumas in the psychological jargon is developmental trauma. There's event trauma, that's everything I've mentioned so far, and developmental trauma. And that's where, in an ongoing and repeated way, we're just not met and seen and loved and understood as we needed to when we were children. And so it's not really a specific event, but it's an environment that shaped us so deeply that we can very much have PTS symptoms from that. So this is just the terrain of trauma. Are there any questions about that so far?
Can you say that last piece again about the
developmental?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. The question's about just repeating the developmental trauma piece. Just developmental trauma happens. It's not such an event-based thing, but it just basically happened in our formative years when, in our family of origin, we weren't loved, seen, heard, understood, nurtured, whatever the words are, in the way that actually we could really receive it. And the impact of that usually is that we feel bad about ourselves. Because we personalize it, internalize it, and feel like there's something wrong with us. Because we're kids and we're narcissistic and we don't understand that adults have their own issues. Yes.
I would like to say that for me, about the shootings, you know, I don't know anything about Aurora. I've never been there. I don't go to the movies. I don't know anything about Batman. But I felt the news coverage was so poignant that the people, both the ones who died and the ones who lived, it just broke my heart. And my point is, this room is pretty crowded tonight, and my feeling is you didn't have to be there, and you didn't have to know anybody. All you had to do was just look into the faces and hear about the people who were lost in the heroism, and it just, precious, precious jewels were at that theater, and it broke my heart, the magnitude of the loss because of the people who were sacrificed, and I thought the media did a really just magnificent job of bringing them to our hearts, mm-hmm. not like something, you hear this happened a million miles away, well, you know, I never You know what I mean? And so I think it made it very immediate for, I would assume, many people who were not there and who didn't know anybody.
So in case the mic didn't pick it up, the comment is that the media really brought home the reality, both the tragedy of it as well as kind of the heroism and the, you know, beautiful qualities that it brought out in people. And so that you really didn't have to be there. I personally don't watch much TV. My personal experience, some of you may share this as well. I'm sure some of you share your experience too. I was visiting my family and the TV was on a lot. And almost the level of detail that it gets covered on incessantly for 24/7, I don't know. A Pennsylvania quarter, you know, from 1997 was found on the curb, and you know, it just sometimes to me it feels like the level of detail that the media uses to cover it is really actually a way of avoiding it. It's sort of narrowing our focus right past the horror to just a lot of minutiae. I don't want to just, you know, do a blanket critique of the media, but there's something about, to me, the incessant coverage over stuff that I didn't personally care about that I found sort of off and missing the point. But I'm glad you had that experience. There's something to be really said about the role of media, too, in trauma, because we can get very plugged in to hearing lots of horrible news about stuff that either we can't do something about or we choose not to do something about. And that can really have a big effect. And it's really wise for people to get it when it's time to disengage. And that's a part of dealing with something like this. At a certain point, if you find it, instead of like connecting you and helping you feel compassion in all the things you're talking about, great, it's working. If you feel immobilized, helpless, like depressed because of what you're watching, it's probably not all that helpful. And we have this kind of like, we have to know, you know, that whole rubberneck phenomenon of, you know, staring at the accident. But, you know, to really check in around your media consumption around these things. When is enough enough? Mm-hmm. So the comment is that for you, having the gentle reminders, it was, you know, the level that you wanted, and seeing a flag at half mast was actually somehow very touching. And another comment on flags at half mast all around Boulder. So I want to say a little bit about actually the gifts of trauma. People who've been survivors in some way, one of the gifts often is that people are very sensitive and possibly very intuitive. Because it was actually a survival strategy. You had to be. I mean, it's horrible that a person would have to be so attuned when they were young to, you know, a parent's inappropriateness. But it can also have a gift once that trauma is resolved in some way. Trauma just makes us so darn human, so darn humble. And it gives us a tremendous inroad into connecting with others, because we've all been traumatized in some way. It's the human experience, the deep, deep part of the human experience. When you renegotiate trauma and actually come out of it, you are stronger and deeper and wiser and bigger, all those things. And that makes you that much better of a bodhisattva, you know, better person to offer help, solace, comfort, compassion, or if a person needs help being assertive, you know, giving your strength. So all of these things, you know, just help us help each other. I mean, it would be great if no trauma ever happened, so this would never be necessary, but that ain't going to happen. And healing trauma is really, it's inseparable from the spiritual path. I mean, our Buddhist spiritual path is all about waking up, being aware of the present moment. That's basically what the path is. Essentially, and that leads to freedom. And trauma is one way that that gets obstructed. So healing our trauma is a really important part of our Dharma path. It's not like that's psychological, that's over here, and our spiritual path is here. That's just completely artificial. Healing our trauma is a deeply spiritual act, even if it's therapy. And I think the kind of the last thing to say about the relationship of spirituality and trauma healing is that in the spiritual world, we tend to look at traumatic events through the lens of forgiveness, and that we will actually be so much happier when we can forgive. And I completely agree with that. And, you know, and starting with forgiveness sometimes is like putting the cart before the horse. Forgiveness often comes when we've actually renegotiated and resolved our trauma, so we're not in those traumatic responses, and then forgiveness is very natural. It just comes, you know, very easily when we've really done a good job of not guilt-tripping ourselves, not spiritually... what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, yeah. The premature transcendence. Oh, I'll just forgive. And meanwhile, there's a tremendous amount of rage or fear or helplessness locked inside that you're sort of papering over with your idealism, your spiritual idealism. So our spirituality can get in the way of forgiveness when we kind of practice premature forgiveness. False forgiveness. We have to renegotiate, you know, the harm that we've received in order to really fully forgive. So, and when we do forgive, we feel a whole lot better. So, it's kind of both and. Okay. So what... We're sort of at a natural breaking point now, because the rest of class is really going to be focused experientially on how we can work with trauma. And I'm going to encourage right now that with the rest of class, when you think of something traumatic, don't go to your 10. Don't go to the worst thing that's ever happened to you. Because really what you'll learn much better if you're working with a 3 or a 4 or a 5. Something that's been problematic for you in your past that gets in your way in the present, that you're still chewing over, whether it was yesterday or 10 years ago, but not a really bad thing. if you get into the really bad thing, you won't be able to take in what we're doing as easily. So that'll be like a gift to yourself. If you keep going to the 8 or the 9 or the 10, just come back to your 3 or your 4 or your 5. I mean, maybe your boss just really pissed you off yesterday. That would be fine to work with tonight. So, how you doing? Check in. Feel your body. Notice you have a body. Notice you have a breath. And if you would, just again, let's all glance around. We're all in this together. We all know trauma on some level. We're so damn human. We're all in this together. Okay. So now I'm just going to kind of introduce one way of working with trauma, and it's called somatic experiencing. And it's developed by Peter Levine. I was trained primarily by a local therapist, Diane Poole-Heller, who's been around doing this work forever. So I owe a lot of gratitude. Anyone who's been traumatized, who's done that work, owes a lot of gratitude to these folks, because it's a very cool approach and way of working with trauma. And here's his tagline, which I really think brings it home, like what's really unique about this approach. The trauma is not in the story. The trauma is in the nervous system. And in this approach, it's a very body-based approach. And essentially, trauma is the nervous system being out of whack. And, in old style psychotherapy, it was just kind of thought we have to go back and sort of like relive the horror again and again and again until we're desensitized to it or we've, done. for the right person, that could really work. but we've in the psychology field, we just stumble along, we keep learning, and that is not necessarily the same thing as releasing the trauma. Sometimes it wears the trauma groove deeper if it's not done skillfully. So really what needs to happen is the nervous system needs to release. Remember what I said before, that all this energy, too much, too fast, mobilizes all this energy that doesn't get to be released and expressed through action. And so that sublimates into the body as traumatic symptom. And the traumatic symptom is what needs to get worked with. And in this approach, we work with the story, but not in a sort of talk therapy kind of way. We work with the story to excavate the stored arousal in the body. So that's one thing that makes this approach really different from traditional trauma therapy. Another thing that this approach does that's different is it works from the outside in. We don't go to the most horrible moment and start with that. We go to from the outside edges where we might have sensed a little bit of danger or something wrong. And we discharge that. We release that. And then once that is released, then we come in a little more to maybe something that was a little more activating in the event. And it works from the outside in. That way, it avoids the possibility of being re-traumatized. One of the big problems with trauma, as I said before, is this reenactment where we're intruded on by our memories, our thoughts, our dreams, even flashbacks. And that actually can wear the trauma groove deeper. So it's really important in any kind of working with trauma that you don't actually just re-traumatize, that you actually release what's locked into the body. So when we talk about stored energy in the nervous system, we just need to briefly understand the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous systems. How many of you have a handle on that? I'm just curious. Okay, quite a bit. So I'll be very simple. So sympathetic is what, you know, mobilizes us for action, for activity. The parasympathetic is more the rest and digest part of the nervous system. And in a way, generally in a kind of happy, healthy person, we're mostly in our parasympathetic. We're calm, we're clear, we're, you know, focused on what's outside of us, we're in the present. And that's all parasympathetic. And then we need to act, so we need to mobilize, and then our sympathetic kicks in. And so, you know, that's generally kind of how we are. When we have traumatic events, what typically happens is either the parasympathetic or the sympathetic gets overactivated. So we're the parasympathetic and sympathetic are out of balance. And as I said, remember that when trauma happens, this energy that gets mobilized, that doesn't get to be expressed, stays in the body as symptom, and it can go onto the overactivated sympathetic or the overactivated parasympathetic. An overactivated sympathetic is hypervigilance, anxiety or panic, restlessness, rage, flashbacks, sleep disturbance. So this is one side of it, our nervous system out of balance. That's the overactivated sympathetic. The overactivated parasympathetic is, instead of being calm, we're depressed. We feel dead. We're dissociated. We have a loss of interest in life. We're in some kind of immobility. We're frozen in some way. And shame, by the way, is a kind of freeze. If we're really ashamed, it's a kind of psychic immobility where we're just kind of frozen. Can you kind of feel that about shame? We're just sort of dead in a way to ourselves. So these are sort of the common ways symptoms manifest, trauma symptoms. And then they can also lead to medical symptoms. So there's psychosomatic expressions of trauma. So chronic headaches, chronic back pain can actually have a very strong psychosomatic component, and actually mindfulness can be very helpful in working with those. Digestive issues like irritable bowel syndrome can also have a trauma basis. Not saying they always do, but they can. Autoimmune responses, diseases can have a trauma basis. Chronic fatigue can have a trauma basis. So there's a lot of just, you know, what we would call purely physical symptoms that can manifest from this energy that didn't get to be expressed. So what would you guess when we switch now to healing the trauma, what would you guess needs to happen?
The energy.
Exactly. Releasing the energy. What brings the nervous system back into balance is not rehashing the story 1,000 times. It's actually releasing the energy. And then parasympathetic and sympathetic come back into balance. Mm-hmm.
Is this what happens to animals sometimes when they've been traumatized, they shake?
Yes.
They have to do that, I guess, immediately after the time or whatever. Otherwise, this energy gets bound up.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you. So in a dangerous situation, there are three responses. It's easy to remember. You probably know this already. It all starts with F. Fight, flight, or freeze. So if an animal is a fighting kind of animal, the animal will fight. If it's a fleeing kind of animal, the animal will flee. If neither of those options are available because a prey is, you know, been taken down by a predator, the animal will go into a playing possum state, a freeze state. And it's thought that that's helpful because the predator may get distracted. Okay, well, the thing's dead, so I can kind of relax. I got a meal here, and, you know. Sometimes predators will actually go away and come back, and then what the animal does is it comes out of the freeze state by shaking and releasing all of that immobility by coming back into mobility, and then they can run away. So that's the last ditch response, and when that happens, it's thought that the animal's in a very dissociated state. So if you go into freeze in a trauma response, there can be strong dissociation. That's when people can feel like they're outside of their body looking in. That's kind of part of the freeze state. Now, apparently in natural settings, and I can't say this definitively, but animals don't tend to get traumatized. I think they get traumatized in laboratory settings more often. But people get traumatized. And why do we get traumatized? Well, do you just shake it off? I mean, have you ever just sort of come out of your freeze? Some embarrassing thing happened, so you just go into a corner and sort of shake it off, and then boom, hey, I'm back, right? We don't usually do that. 'Cause we have this darn thing called the frontal cortex.
Actually, I was going to say that's the embarrassing thing is the
shaking. Then we're re-traumatized. Then we have to shake again. It's where does it stop? So, Peter Levine's theory is that the neocortex we're because we're very rational and we can think about past and future and oh my God, where is this going? I mean, have you ever had that thought? Right, we put a brake on it. We're scared of the intensity of it, and maybe we're scared of the social embarrassment. I don't really know, but people tend to get traumatized. Now, I think there's new research being done that shows animals getting traumatized more. That's why I say I can't say this definitively. So I don't want to really like comment on that because I don't know. But we know we get traumatized and. So there's some steps in healing trauma, more specifically. The first thing is to uncouple the terror, fear, panic, whatever it was, from the immobility. The immobility or the freeze state is actually a highly energized state. The freeze state is where both parasympathetic and sympathetic are activated. It's like the brake and the gas pedal of a car being on at the same time. So a person can be frozen, and it can be a flat affect person. And yet, if you poke around in there with a person, actually what's underneath that freeze is a ton of energy. And a freeze state is a highly tense, activated, energetic response in the body. So breaking the gas pedal on at the same time. So when we can take the fear and remove it from the immobility, then the energy that's under that freeze state can be available. So we need to decouple the fear from the immobilization. That allows us to start getting mobile. We might shake. We might actually go into spontaneous running as a flight response. We come back into mobility, and that resets the nervous system. And then the third thing we need to do is we need to complete the arousal cycle. in trauma, we are instinctively compromised. Our instincts did not get to express themselves. Our instincts are for fight and flight, and we didn't get to do those things. So to really release that energy, we need to reactivate fight and flight, and we can do this awesomely enough just by imagining it. When we imagine fight and flight, our body releases the energy. And there's some, you know, sort of more specific steps. When there's danger, what we do as animals is the first thing is we startle. The second thing is we orient. The third thing is we do the appropriate defensive response, fight or flight. And then once we're done, we equilibrate. We rest in our energy and our nervous system come back into balance. So this is essentially what we need to do to heal trauma in this approach. Let me just check in, see if there's questions about that. Okay.
All three.
I'll just review the four steps. That was the
four.
The first step, okay, this is what we do to actually deal competently with a threat. Okay, the first is startle. The second is orient. The third is take appropriate action. And the fourth is to equilibrate by just kind of resting and really getting it that actually we took care of business. Ah, the other second step. Damn. Okay, there were three. Okay, right. This was the four that were within number three. So, okay. The first is, I'm sorry, I'll just repeat all three. The first is to uncouple fear from immobilization. The second is to restore mobility. And the third is to complete the arousal cycle. And the four that I just mentioned are completing the arousal cycle. You can hear this all online later. But thank you. And we're gonna work with this a little bit, so stay tuned for that. So, yes. Okay.
What happens when someone knows a traumatic state is around the corner? There's an anticipation of losing someone might die. Mm-hmm. And they're anticipating this to happen quite soon. It's very traumatic. It hasn't happened yet.
Mm-hmm.
They know it will.
Mm-hmm.
Can you deal with trauma in the same way?
Yes, I mean, I think you could. We haven't quite gone through the technique yet, but there's a way you could actually take that as a threat, right? And startle, orient. Now, you can't take defensive action, right, with that, because that's just life.
You could shake. You could shake.
Sure. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I tell you the truth, I've never worked with that. So, yeah.
Meaning dance or whatever.
Right.
That's what we do as human beings, rather than
right.
Shake. We
right.
Do something like that.
Yeah, I think body language.
I mean, you know, just to say, remember that our mindfulness practice, especially mindfulness of body, is a kind of trauma healing. And there's an approach to Vipassana, which is by Goenka, which is only body scan. You only deal with sensation. You don't even deal with thought and image very much. And that even that can heal. You can release stuff purely through sensation. So you could take a mindfulness approach to that, you know. And you could go through startle and orient. You could redo that or pre-do that, right? You know, I mean, in terms of fight or flight, you could imagine running away from the situation, you could imagine being angry at the situation. But because we haven't done the technique yet, what's most important in the whole technique is mindfulness. If we aren't aware of our experience and we're running anger deeply, all we're doing is creating the habit of anger. Rather than releasing, we're actually just deepening the groove. The same with fear, the same with any difficult emotion. So this technique necessarily involves being aware. When we are aware of our experience, it actually doesn't create further mental habit. It actually deconditions the mental habit when we're really aware of our experience. So awareness is absolutely key in SC and in any transformation on the Dharma path. So tonight and in any trauma work, we want to avoid overwhelm. We want to avoid wearing deeper the neural grooves of our trauma. And what is overwhelm? I wanted to give you the most simple definition that I've heard. Overwhelm is loss of observer. If you are not able to be aware of your experience and you are lost in it, you are likely deepening the habits, deepening the neural grooves. So this is why I've just kept saying tonight, how are you doing? What's happening in your body? Notice your breath. This is where observation tends to be most easy, to notice your body. So please, why not? Just notice the breath, if you would. So in this approach, we employ something called titration. We take the challenge one little drop at a time, and actually we alternate between nourishment, support, what's good in our lives. We alternate between that and one more little drop of the trauma. You can access the release much better when you're in what we call a resource place. That means a place where you're actually in touch with your well-being, what's good in your life, or even what's good about the exact situation you're working with. So we titrate the challenge one little drop at a time, and that avoids the re-traumatizing. And then another thing to say about this approach is that what the part of us that gets traumatized is the reptilian brain. This is the brain stem. So we have a three-part brain, reptilian, mammalian, and primate. The reptilian is our instincts, and it's all the automatic, you know, things in our body like thirst and hunger, etc. The limbic or mammalian brain is more our emotional center, and the primate brain, the frontal cortex, is more of our thought and awareness center. So the part of us that gets traumatized is the reptilian brain. The reptilian brain doesn't really process thought and image. It processes sensation. So you can tell yourself, well, I'm fine, that's over, been there, done that, and yet you don't feel any different. Why is that? It's because your frontal cortex is not traumatized. Your thought centers are fine. It's the reptilian brain that is not convinced yet. The way the reptilian brain gets convinced is to feel the sensations of safety, of fight, of flight. We need to feel the sensations. So this approach just will be body, body, body. Because we're really, it's like we're just going, oh, come on, reptilian brain. We're going to help you now. And we help that part of us by feeling sensation. So every step of the way, I'm going to be asking you to be aware of physical sensations. So sensations are not, wow, I got to get out of here. That's not a physical sensation, right? Sensation is not, oh my God, where is this going? That is not a sensation. Sensation is buzz, pulse, tingle, throb, warm, cool, loose, tight, right? Heavy, light, constricted, open. Those are all sensations. That's what we really need to be aware of in order to help the trauma unlock. So in a minute, we'll do some experiential, and it'll be about probably just 10 minutes. I'm just really introducing this to you, and this is something you could use on your own, but I would really read about it more. This is just a little intro. And, you know, if you're really working with strong trauma symptoms, it's very likely you're going to need help, you know. And that's just fine. We all need help. Nobody does it alone. So let me just stop here and just see, was that clear? Are there questions? Please feel free. Yes?
Just a quick question. Is there a resource you'd recommend?
A resource, yeah.
You may want to read
more
about it.
Peter Levine has a new book. He's got an older book called Waking the Tiger. And the new book, which is sitting on my desk. Does anyone know the title of his new book? Because it is just a blank. I'm dissociated. I'm having a traumatic response.
Can we start with a new book or an old book?
I would recommend the new book, yeah. But I'm not remembering the name. Anyone know it? Darn. Come on.
We don't need brains, we've got Google.
Exactly. I mean, I could probably Google it right now, you know. I've never thought of that before.
Let's go buy some ginkgo.
Yeah, I need some help. Yes.
Kind of what we're getting?
Yes. Uh-huh. And actually, it's kind of interesting, in a way. And this is where mindfulness, you know, is really our guide. Even the freeze response apparently needs completion. So, and there's different approaches to this, but some SE therapists will have you just go right out of freeze into fight and flight and have those responses. Others believe, actually, no, just let yourself be in freeze and just be aware of freeze. What's it like, right? How many times have you heard me say that? Just to be aware of freeze will unlock the freeze and eventually fight and flight will come. So, yeah.
One more question.
Yes.
One way or another, you do need to get to fight or flight, and does that happen in actuality, or is that imagination, or physical experiencing?
Do we need to get to fight and flight, actually versus imagining? We do need to get to fight and flight. It is one of the things I'll say it this way, we feel competent when we can complete our animal instincts. This isn't trauma healing is not a rational process. It's actually letting our reptilian brain do what it desperately wants to do, which is fight and flight. And when we do that, we feel good. We feel empowered. We feel like I took care of business. We feel I can, right? Right? Not like, what's wrong with me, right? We're just like, mm. And it does not have to be acted out physically. Actually, we can release just by imagining fight and flight. Some people will want to actually sort of run, you know, as they're imagining running. But that doesn't have to happen. What needs to happen is mindfulness. And you can run all you want, you know, and that's not going to release your trauma, you know, actually running. It has to be associated with the initial experience. So it doesn't really matter if you actually fight or actually flight to release.